Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey guys, you're listening to Take the Hit with Official Charts, a podcast that goes way beyond your standard music interview and asks the questions you never knew you needed answers to. My name's Rob, I'm editor of officialcharts.com, a website full of music news, features and interviews, as well as being home of the official singles and albums charts, as heard on BBC Radio 1. Joining me today is Gary and Helen from the team.
Hello.
Hi, how did this happen?
How are you both?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
Yeah, good, thanks. Good.
I'm going to move on to this week's guest, which is the wonderful Sarah Bareilles. Most people will know her as the singer and songwriter of Love Song and Brave, particularly in the UK, where those songs were. Well, Love Song was a massive hit. Brave, not so much. It missed the top 40, but it was everywhere.
I think it was a big viral hit, wasn't it? I remember lots of people have kind of adapted it as their anthem to, well, for coming out and for just doing things that they always wanted to do. And I remember seeing like schools doing whole kind of one long shot montage of the whole school singing Brave and doing a performance and things like that. It just seemed to take on a life of its own.
I have to admit, I didn't realise she'd released so many albums. She's released 5 and she's about to release her 6th, called Amidst the Chaos. And 4 of those went top 10 in America, which is huge. Has Sarah been on your radar much, Helen?
Honestly, not massively. So when Love Song came out, that was, how old was I? I was about 13 when that was big. So that's another kind of defining song for my childhood, I guess. And I remember that being everywhere. Like, we all sort of played it. We all shared it with each other on Bluetooth on our phones.
Old school.
So what a moment in culture.
Yes, what a moment.
And that was sort of the main impact that Sarah had on my sort of life in general. But I've been seeing a lot about Waitress recently.
Yes.
A lot. Which has sort of brought her back to the forefront. And I also didn't realise how many albums she'd released and how much success she's had. So I feel a little bit out of the loop. I'll probably go home and have a bit more of a dig around in her.
Well,
in
listen to this interview and you'll get everything you need to know.
All the goss.
Yeah. She's definitely one of life's overachievers that makes you wonder what the hell you're doing with your own life.
Because
as you mentioned, she wrote all the music and briefly starred in the musical Waitress, which has just opened in the UK after a few very successful years on Broadway, which is amazing to get a new musical that has legs and continues to be a success and doesn't just die after a year is really difficult. And the songs seem to have really resonated with people. So yeah, for this interview, I met her during a ridiculously busy week because it was the previews for Waitress. And on the one I went to, she also did like a little fan experience thing where she played songs from her new album, Amidst the Chaos. And so I met her at Sony's label offices in a very fancy boardroom. Let's go for it, shall we? Have a listen.
Great.
So
Sarah Bareilles. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm managing.
That looks like a healthy tea.
It is an herbal tea. I think I'm over-caffeinated this morning already.
Yeah, I think I might be a bit as well.
Yeah, I'm at the thing where I've had many coffees and many teas, so I switched to chamomile.
But what time were you up this morning? Because you were doing... Well, explain what you were doing this morning.
Yeah, we were playing at the public piano at...
At King's Cross?
Yes. Sorry. No. I've been up since 7, and we took the car down there and surprised some fans, or didn't really surprise them. We were tweeting about it. And I played a few songs and did a little pop-up performance. It was perfect. Yeah, it was really, really fun. I haven't played a show here in a long time, and the only time I've been on stage has been at the Waitress Theatre at the Adelphi. So.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Is it... obviously, you do shows all the time and perform in front of strangers all the time, but is it weird doing it in a public place where it's for anyone,
yeah,
not just the fans necessarily, it's everyone's listening?
Totally. I sort of love it. It's, you know, busking for the people is, yeah, is like a really beautiful thing to get to do. No, it's fun. Other than not having vocal amplification, it's perfect. It's just like that piano is beautiful and bright, and the space is, it's so vital to have, you know, people rushing around you and on their way to things, and yeah, people stopping to grab a quick picture and then moving on. It's actually kind of beautiful.
Like, some other cool, like, other artists have been doing it.
Yeah, so John Legend did one, and Elton John did one, and, or at least those are the videos I saw of it. Yeah, it was
good.
Really
company
cool
at King's Cross, right? Busking.
Yes. Totally.
You're also in town for Waitress. And I was lucky enough to be at the previews earlier this week. I loved it. It's,
oh, thank you.
It's so kind of sweet and very emotional in parts. And it made me really hungry, I can't lie. Were they selling pie in...
Yes, they sell pie. Yeah, we have our resident pie maker who's been working with some local bakers here. But that's one of the signature pieces that we have. And one of the things that we do is we bake a pie... a fresh pie in the lobby of all of our theaters, because there's nothing like that fresh baked pie scent. So there's literally a brand new pie that's getting made just for the scent of it. And then there's these darling little mason jars of fresh pie that have been made that you can purchase and then take the mason jar home with
that's
you.
That's what they were.
Yeah.
I thought it was ice cream.
No, because, you know, selling pie by the slice is really messy. So they came up with this very clever way to have people get to take home a little souvenir jar, but also get a yummy pie. So
also, those London theatres are really old and cramped, so you just end up spilling it over everywhere.
I think it would be
jar
a nightmare.
Is important.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you excited about opening London? Obviously, it's been on Broadway for, is it 3 years?
Almost 3 years, yeah.
So you're feeling like quietly confident and a bit cocky secretly? That, yeah, great.
Oh, God, no, never. No, because I... have seen firsthand, you know, it's a hard won thing to get to be able to celebrate every passing year. So we take it really seriously in wanting to launch a really strong production here. And I think the thing that makes me feel the most just sort of satisfied with this whole process has been getting to sit in the audience and experiencing the show next to London audiences, and just people that are strangers and I don't know them, and they're laughing and they're crying and they're delighting in this story that has become so beloved to me, but is new to this brand new audience. So it's really beautiful, and we have our incredible cast that are working so hard. You know, the schedule of these West End productions, that 8 shows a week, is so brutal.
Yeah,
and I can say that from experience. I have done the Broadway schedule. So I applaud them for their dedication and their intention, and they take really good care of each other too. So it's a really kind company. It's easy to root for them. So
yeah, that's good. The audience reaction during the show was great. I thought really
amazing.
Involved, and I was actually sat next to some, I think, real super fans of yours. they were in tears.
Aww.
They were. It must be nice to kind of. To have the songs you've written for it resonate with people. Obviously, you don't make people cry, so, but in a good way.
Yeah. I'm never mad at making... I cry so much anyway in my life. I always have. I'm just a very emotional person. So I'm always happy when someone feels vulnerable enough to cry. I think that's a good place to find yourself every once in a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I really love this show so much, and the music means so much to me, and it's been such a beautiful experience that has truly changed my life in every way, shape, and form. I always talk about it this way. I feel like my life falls into two categories, and it's before Waitress and after Waitress. And really, my life is so much infinitely better now because this show has come into my life.
Oh, amazing. Yeah, I loved in the intro bit, just before everything kicks off, you'd reworked one of your songs into basically a turn your damn phones off.
I know.
But it's really good.
Yeah, thanks.
Such a nice touch.
We were trying to think of a clever way to kind of address the fact that phones are so... I actually noticed they're less prevalent here, but in the States especially, oh, the phones are just a massive problem.
I've heard it's
lots of filming during the show, so we're trying to think of a way to keep it lighthearted but also remind people that we were serious about it being a no phone zone. But the British etiquette is intact, so good.
Excellent.
On you.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. And you're also here to promote a new album,
yes,
Amidst the Chaos, and I was lucky enough to hear some songs after the show with a few fans. Well, sounding
at our awkward first date, I was sitting on the edge of the stage playing for, you know, as you were there, but playing for a handful of fans, and it was so funny because the theater's huge, and so it felt like either there should have been more people there, or we should have like all been huddled in a circle
or something.
Dressing
room or something.
Yeah, it was so funny because we didn't know where to look when the song started. It was cute.
Yeah, I wanted to ask because obviously in previews the Waitress was, but it was actually the real scary bit playing songs to people from the album, being like, whoa.
It's always interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice thing about Waitress is that I get to just literally sit in the back of the room and creep out, you know, before the curtain call's finished, so I don't have to experience it in the moment. But yeah, I'm re-entering this phase where I'm sort of standing in the center of a presentation again. You know, I've made this record and I'm really proud of it, and now it's time to share it with the world again, and it feels really good and it feels really cathartic, but it does feel foreign a little bit because I've been living in this other space for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, is it kind of retraining your brain in a different way?
I think so.
Making songs for shows must be so different.
It is, yeah, it's really, and I think the thing that's the most different about the process is that making a musical is so intensely collaborative. It's not, it feels like you're on a sports team with someone. Like nobody is acting alone, and every move you make is in relation to another department. And so the insular nature of writing music and being a songwriter it feels a little bit foreign to me right now. So, you know, in making this record, it was actually nice. Some of what I took from Waitress was that collaborative nature, and I did more songwriting with people. I did more co-writing, and then going back into the studio, it was a beautiful collaborative experience with T-Bone Burnett, my producer, and that part was really wonderful. And now comes the collaboration with the audience. So it's just baby steps, and I'm taking a lot of what I learned and trying to just embrace a new perspective.
Yeah, I'm going to say what I heard of the track so far, what really kind of struck me was the musicality of the new songs. Mm-hmm. And that's always been there, obviously.
Yeah.
But like you say, working with T-Bone, who's worked with, who's it again, like,
Ray of Incredible Project. I mean, I got introduced to him back, I mean, he's worked with just about you name it.
Yeah.
I got introduced to him through a record he did with a band called Counting Crows, and they had a record, August and Everything After. And that is one of my Desert Island records, so I'm one of those artists that really, I mean, I wore that album out. But, T-Bone is a really prolific, wise sort of oracle artist. He was such a beautiful teacher in this process, and one of the things that he really is so vigilant about is just taste and performance, as opposed to crafting something with a digital media, you know, I mean,
right,
as opposed to crafting a perfect performance. He's just really interested in capturing a performance that feels perfect, even if it, in its imperfection. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely moods in the songs. There's like nice vibes and certain moods are created through
I think it's something that I really craved right now. I don't know if it's just because I am so have been so impacted by the political climate and the amount of media. It just, like, we're so inundated with screens and technology all the time that I was really craving something that felt organic. And there is nobody better on this earth to make an organic record, like an organic sounding record, than Thibaut Burnett.
One of the tracks I loved immediately when you played it was Same Honesty.
Yeah, Same Honesty. Oh,
what a great song. You said it was done in one take.
Yeah, that was one of the ones that I sang and played piano as the band was tracking, and we all just got the song. And so that's a lot of artists do it that way, but I have never really done it that way. So that was extraordinarily special for me. Just, it felt like a rite of passage a little bit.
It's a really good track.
Thanks.
Saint Honesty, listen to it.
Thank you.
One of the other things you mentioned during that little playback you did was, again, you mentioned it just now, actually, political slant to this album. There's a lot of love for Obama, by the sounds of it,
in
the track. Where is he?
I miss him. I think I'm not alone in the fact that in the last couple of years I've gone through my own sort of personal political awakening, and I'm sort of embarrassed to say how disengaged I have been in my life, but all of that is to just say that I find myself more sincerely engaged in what's happening globally and politically, locally as well. But I find that as an artist, what I want to be able to discuss is the sort of emotional component of that. Mm. I think as opposed to doing anything that sounds preachy, which doesn't really resonate for me, and I can't tell anybody what to do in that sense, but I really think it's a good time for us as a people in the world, all over the world, to just like examine who we are and what we're capable of. And so I think that those themes do run deep.
Yeah. I suppose it is good, isn't it? Those times, like, it's everyone seems to be more politically aware, they seem to be educating themselves. But I mean, that's the good thing that's coming out of.
I really do. I think it's there's only one way to look at it, and that's with like the sense that everything happens for a reason. And look at all these incredible movements that would not have been fueled with such attention and devotion. You know, the new feminist movement, the Me Too movement, like Time's Up, like all these sort of consciousness movements that are about asking harder questions and sort of demanding more of ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a clumsy time because so much of this is brand new. So we're not getting it right all the time. But I think at the end of the day, to be able to have the perspective of looking back and going, but at least we're asking deeper questions. We might not know what we're aiming at yet, but it's a beautiful thing to be asking deeper questions.
Yeah. Yeah. And the album itself, just, it's a great escapist kind of, like you say, it's like a yin to the yang of the craziness of the world.
Yeah.
But by the sounds of what I've done so far of the album.
Yeah, my hope is that it feels comforting, that people don't feel alone. I mean, that's what I always have hoped for my records, is that people can sort of relate to the messages and feel themselves. I mean, I think as a songwriter, it's my job to try to articulate things that people are trying to say but might not know how to. So I hope there's some of that on the record.
Are you ready to play?
I'm ready.
So to explain, we've got this fine bingo machine here.
I'm touching it. It's
sounds
very
expensive, doesn't it?
Yeah. What is that? Porcelain?
And the numbers that you turn out from the bingo machine, so you're going to turn this,
okay,
this bad boy, correspond with songs and where they sit on the UK's best-selling singles of all time list. And I'll ask you questions based on those songs.
Okay.
Ready to go?
So I just turn it like this?
Let's go for it.
Let's do it. Number 15.
Number 15, it's a classic. So the 15th...
Dropping the balls over here.
There it is.
You've even put it in its number place on the board.
Of course I did. I'm an A student.
Yeah.
Type A.
So the 15th biggest selling single of all time is Bryan Adams' Everything I Do It For You.
Oh,
what a song.
Cute. From Robin Hood.
Number one in 1991. Sold 1.86 million copies in the UK. It's also one of the longest ever number ones. Longest reigning number ones in the UK. About 16 weeks. It's a long time.
It's a long time. Good for him.
Good for him.
I absolutely danced to that song.
Or like
junior
a...
junior high or something.
Is it like a prom?
It seems like one of those, like a junior high dance,
yeah.
High school dance, yeah.
So my question for you is, what's the kind of nicest thing a fan has ever bought you or done for you in the sense of sort of made you carry on doing what you do? Is there kind of fan stories that you get?
Oh my gosh. I could go on and on. I get choked up thinking about it. I have so many incredible little vignettes in my mind about letters I've received or gifts or offerings or just like the great attention to detail, beautiful drawings. One thing that sticks out is that I have a small fan community that is the Sarah B fan community, and they have Sarah B fans. They've been around since like the beginning. They are like OG fans.
Nice.
And
they gave you a sensible fandom name as well.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't like call themselves something stupid.
That age as well.
Yeah.
Seasoned well at the time.
Right, totally. and they're very sweet and have given me many gifts over the years, but there was one year that they compiled a whole book of letters from people from all over the world, and it was just really beautiful. It was this beautifully big bound book, like a scrapbook pulled together, and it was notes and pictures and trinkets, and it was just a beautiful keepsake of
so
the idea
sweet.
Of the community at large. And one of the things I love about them is that they, like, whether or not I'm involved, they come together as a community just because they happen to have found each other through my music, but they're friends outside of it, which I sort of love that if I could be like a little yenta, like a little matchmaker for friendship, that's a beautiful thing too.
Where do you keep all the things that, do you get lots of fan gifts? Like, where do you put
I do,
all that stuff?
Yeah, I do. Sometimes it's in, I have a lot of stuff that's like sort of near my piano and in my studio space. And I keep keepsake boxes that are just, you know, kind of tucked in my closet that have lots of letters, and sometimes I pull them out. And I'm still going through fan mail right now from Waitress, because I don't usually have a physical address people send things to, but people send a lot of mail to the theater.
Right.
So I'm going through fan mail now, which is just, it's really sweet, but I'm very slow about it. Lots of people have tattoos with my lyrics on them. I've done a lot of handwriting of tattoos for people.
Have you?
Yeah. Yeah.
That feels like a big responsibility.
Oh my God, tell me about it. I know, even just the writing of it, I'm like, I don't know if my handwriting is worth getting it on your body, but you do.
What if you looked at it and went, not my best handwriting, but
then I write it over again. I have to at least make it passable. Yeah.
Should we go again?
Mm-hmm.
There you go, Abby.
Really? Hey, there it is. Okay, 33.
So the 33rd biggest selling single of all time is Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
Yes, girl, get it.
Number one in February 1999. It's 20 years ago.
Oh, jeez.
I can remember that very clearly.
Oh, yeah, me too.
It was everywhere.
It was everywhere. It was like, it was actually as if an alien had landed from another planet, and we
literally
were all like, who is this creature? Like, I'm obsessed.
Also, I don't really trust people that say they don't like that song.
I know.
How can you not like that
it's
song?
It's a good song. I was talking about this song kind of recently, actually. I actually think you just gotta give credit where credit's due. I mean, it's a good song is a good song.
It's
and
a lot
of those pop songs, those super pop songs from the 90s especially, they were just easily played on a guitar or a piano. Like, they just exist. You know, we were pre, like, producer pop, where it doesn't really exist outside of the actual track. But, it's really cool.
The my question is there a moment in your career so far that you would like a do-over on?
Oh my, this is hilarious. Yes. I performed with Taylor Swift at her Staples concert, and we were doing my song Brave, and she was, so she's in the arena at Los Angeles, in Los Angeles, it's massive, I don't even know how many people, 50,000 people probably, something like that. So really big audience. And I had my in-ear monitors in, so, which is normal for that size stage.
Yeah.
And I was on the elevator lift at the back of the stage, so she's introducing me, I can hear all the screaming teenage girl fans, and so then the elevator starts to go up, and I come up, and I'm at the top of the stairs at the back of the stage, and the crowd's going wild, and I hear the music start, and the screams are so loud that I could not hear the pitch reference for the song even a little bit. I had no clue where the music was. I could hear the rhythm, but I could not hear the piano at all. And I just had to start singing, and I picked some notes out of thin air, and I could tell immediately that they weren't the right notes, and I pulled one of the in-ear monitors out, but I couldn't hear anything over the screams of the audience. I looked down at the music director, and he looks up at me with this like perplexed look on his face, like, what noise are you making right now? So I spent the first half of that verse just like searching for the pitch of the song. I had no idea where it was.
What song was it?
Brave.
You're doing Brave.
Yeah, my song.
Was this the 1989 tour that she did?
No, this was a tour I should probably know the name of, but I don't.
An earlier one. Oh, yeah. So this is before she was doing her big like presenting to the stage. She did like a phase of.
Yeah, well, she was. Yeah, we were in the middle. It was that. It was where she was bringing people out every night. Was that the 1989 tour?
I think so.
Oh, cool. Do I sound old yet? What are the kids doing these days? Yeah. It was pretty embarrassing. But moved on. And I sort of wished I could do it over. Actually, the part I wish I could do over is how hard I was on myself about it. I was so hard on myself about it that I kind of, like, didn't have a good time. And that's the only thing. For all you people listening out there, that's the thing I wish I could do over. I don't care about fucking up. Is it okay to say fucking? Great. I actually care less about fucking up, and every time I screw up like that, I always, when I get a little ways away from it, I always look back and I'm always like, God, I was just so mean to myself about it. Relax, Sarah.
Did you get to meet Taylor?
Yeah. She's super sweet, really sweet, very generous host, really loving, and actually was so sweet about the fact that I was so upset about the song, and she was just really, really loving about the whole thing.
Looks very like, kind. I guess it's one of those things that's very like artist specific. Like most people can't relate to having an in-ear monitor, and like it's something I've never experienced. I can't imagine how lost I would feel,
totally,
not being able to hear anything.
No, but most artists have had something where there's a like a technological difficulty. And
is that when you keep seeing people on TV like just ripping out their earpiece?
Yeah.
And they're like, I can't hear.
Yeah, sometimes. So yeah, because the sound changes a lot from based on how many people are in the room.
Right.
So if you might get a mix that sounds amazing in your ears, and then the sound changes quite a bit depending on who's in the room, or at least it did for me.
And likewise, is there a really great moment in your career you'd love to relive again if you had the chance?
Oh yeah, I've had some pretty. I think I would love to see what. Oh my gosh, there's so many, it feels like champagne bubbles coming up right now. Like all these like memories. This is gonna sound like I'm bragging, but it actually was just like a really incredible night. And talking about Obama again, but I was at Obama's birthday party at the White House, and it was one of the cooler things I've ever gotten to do in my life.
Wow, that is really cool.
Because it was like everybody turned in their phones. It was casual. They're in slacks and the kids are in jeans. And like, it was just a house party. It was like...
Who else was there?
You name it. Yeah, you name it. But it's like, you know.
That is, I can imagine, I'd want to sort of take in the room again.
Yeah, I think that's part of what I wish I could relive. But it was a beautiful reflection of kind of, you know, their interests and their relationships coming all together. I mean, political people, film, sports, journalism, art. Yeah. Like, it was just a huge cross-section of all sorts of interesting people. And it was just like a cool to be a fly on the wall there.
Should we go again?
Sure.
Look at you getting it.
I got it. 44.
44 is Black Eyed Peas, I Got a Feeling.
Yes. Everyone's favorite wedding song, right?
It is, yeah.
It's the thing that gets the dance party going.
It is, yeah. A wedding disco classic.
Mm-hmm.
Number one in 2009. And that's a while ago.
I know, but...
My question is, what is the last big night out that you had?
Oh, God, you're talking to someone who does not go out that much. Let me think. Big night out. I'm really trying to think.
We're going back.
Yeah. What did I do? I've been working on this show for so long. I'm like,
maybe it was in 2009.
It could have been.
to this song.
Well, I mean, that it's making me think of being in New York City the very first... This is not the last big night out I had, but
a great one.
But a great one was just when I had moved to New York City for a month, and it was just one of those nights that I feel like, maybe it happens in London too, but I feel like these sorts of things only happen in New York City, where you like, you show up to one thing and then all of a sudden someone's there and they're like, oh, I'm going to this other thing, and you like walk across the city and the lights are amazing and it's a summer night and it's breezy and you end up on a rooftop party and they're playing 16 candles on the side of the building and they're handing you like fresh popcorn, and then you like get in a car and you're going to the next thing, and it's an apartment party where they've turned the living room into an outdoor botanical garden, so you like walk inside to go outside, and then you're like getting, you know, slices of pizza on the street at 4 a.m. and it's just one of those like rambling, amazing little snippets of things that in my experience have only ever happened in New York.
So what's your ideal night in then?
I love making dinner. My boyfriend and I do this a lot, just making dinner at home, and then, you know, either something nerdy, like we do a puzzle, or sometimes we read to each other. or it's like, you know, charging through, like the last thing we loved on Netflix was HBO, but Escape from Dannemora. Did you see that?
No.
Oh my God, it was incredible. I'm forgetting what network it's on now, but yeah, we'll do a little binge watch of something. That's like always a good Netflix and chill.
Yeah, literally.
It really is. It's a great night.
I'm struggling to ever stick to something on Netflix. I'm really bad at binge
watching.
Yeah,
well, there's so much content.
Yeah, and everyone telling you everything's amazing. So it's hard to curate what you want to.
It's hard, but...
I'll take that recommendation.
Yeah.
Should we go again?
Yeah.
There it is.
I really like...
There's a flaw in the system.
It is. This is... You guys, come on. Can I talk to the engineers? This is crazy. Okay. 26.
26 is Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You.
Oh, and she will. Yeah. R.I.P. Queen.
The ultimate ballad.
Oh my God, right? Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
That one, yeah.
Number one in 92. My question is, what song or album holds such a special place in your heart that you will never tire of it when it comes on?
I think Fiona Apple, Tidal. Her first record was a really impactful record for me. I think it had to do with timing and where it arrived in my life, and listening to being a young songwriter and a piano player, there was something that was really inspiring about seeing someone like her deal with dark material in a beautiful way and in a poetic way. She, I think, lives in a place that's slightly darker than I tend to resonate, but I was so moved by her storytelling and her wordplay and her lyrics were just, the musicality of her songs was just so, so beautiful to me.
What about your own songs? Is there one that you just secretly really love above everything else?
It's hard to talk about those because they do feel like my children a little bit, but I suppose right now, the song that I find that I'm not fatiguing of is She Used to Be Mine. I mean, I hear that song all the time and I play it all the time, and And I think that there's something, I think there's something special about the resonance that that song is having. There's something that's like, that I'm experiencing watching people connect to that song that is extraordinarily meaningful to me, that it is seeming to unlock something for people in some way. And that as a writer is like the gold standard of what you ever hope to like experience with someone, you know, just connecting with your music.
Yeah. It's like I said, when I went to see Rachel, said fans around me, and that was the song that was being discussed before the thing even started. Yeah. That's what's being talked about.
Yeah. That's so meaningful to me. It's so meaningful to me. And it was the first song I wrote for the show. It was my portal into the world of Waitress. And I actually think there was so much of just channeling Adrian Shelley, who's the writer-director of the film, who sadly is no longer with us. But I did a lot of talking to Adrian's ghost while I was writing that score. And I feel like she's very present in that song.
Should we do it again?
Sure. 14.
14 is Unchained Melody, but it's the Robson and Jerome version, which I'm not sure you'll know, but big in the UK, obviously.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Number one in 1995. Unchained Melody, and I don't know someone who hasn't covered that song. Have you covered this song?
I actually don't think I have.
Wait,
maybe now
what?
I just got a good idea. Yeah.
My question is, do you have a song that you would prefer never to perform again, and you just a bit like, kind of wish I'd never done that one? So you'd like to unchain yourself from,
unchain
if you will.
Myself from, oh gosh. If I had to choose one that I would give the axe to, but it's only just maybe because I've sung it more than any other song, and I'd be just like, okay, we had a good run, I'm always gonna move on. But it's not because I don't love the song, it would be Love Song. But that's just, it's just one of the first songs, so I don't want to be mean to Love Song.
No,
do you know
obviously,
what I mean?
Yeah, but I guess it's the one.
Again, they're like my children.
But I can imagine that would be one you get fatigue with, rather than, oh, I hate that song, it's just...
I've sung it thousands and thousands of times at this point, you know, I mean, I've been doing this... that's from my first record, which came out in 2007, and I had written it before that, so, you know, it's a lot of years, 10 years of singing songs. But I actually am one of those people that feels like, I don't know if it's fair to your audience to sort of, like, retire the songs that they loved you for in the beginning, like, the songs that were your introduction. I think it's cool to reimagine, or just, you know, throw them a bone and play a snippet, at least.
I was going to say, you could rearrange them to either, like, a massive dance banger, or like a death metal, like
like where I really want to be, you know.
And is there outside of your own work, is there a song that is quite popular but you categorically just don't like?
It's one of those things where I'm like really thinking about it. Like, I think I'm not as into, because I like Ariana Grande, and I think I'm not as into Seven Rings until I saw the thing that Lisa Kudrow did where she... Did you see that?
No, I've not seen it, but I love Lisa Kudrow, so I'm excited.
There was just like a little, I don't know who put it together, but Ariana posted it. No, it's one of the things where like the more I hear the song, I think I like it more and more and more. When I first heard it, I was like, I just didn't react to it as much, but it was obviously everywhere. Yeah, but there's a great clip of Lisa Kudrow from that show she was at, The Comeback, where she's going, I got it,
oh,
I got it,
yeah.
And it's like, my hair, gee, thanks, I got it, you know. So they did this splicing thing together, which was very funny.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for playing Take the Hit with the...
Oh, yeah, with this high quality... Guys, you gotta run out and get one.
We're gonna sell branded ones.
Right, okay, perfect.
Thank you so much. You.
So that was Sarah Bareilles.
Yeah, she's lovely. She did sound a bit tired at the beginning, but I think she really got into it.
Really got into it.
Yeah, she sounds lovely.
I think she really liked the bingo machine.
This bingo machine seems to be taking them down a bit, doesn't it? They're struggling a little bit with this bingo machine.
So what did you think?
Well, I have to say that the moment that she would sort of replay in her life would be the Taylor Swift concert where she appeared and sang Brave with Taylor Swift. I hadn't seen it, but I went straight to YouTube when I heard the interview, and yeah, I can understand why she'd like to redo it. It's not her finest hour, I would say. Only the very sort of beginning, she sort of clearly couldn't hear. You could see that she couldn't hear what was coming through the in-ear, as they say.
When I used to be in a folk band years ago as a teen.
Mm. Oh, hello. What? What's this?
What were they called?
I used to... I'm not telling you that.
Oh, we'll find it.
Maybe another day. I had a... Not that it's quite the same level, but I've been there. We played a gig on the back of a lorry and the sound was... Sorry to the tech, but it was absolutely dreadful. And I know for a fact I was completely out of tune. I couldn't hear myself. I think my violin went out of tune at one point. And it was one of the only performances we got videos of.
Oh, no.
And they're on YouTube.
And the band was called again?
I'll show you that off air.
Helen, you're so damn cool. You were in a cool band playing on the back of a lorry, playing a violin.
Yeah, she never told us this.
I loved that her ideal night out is actually really having a night in.
Yeah, I feel that.
Although I haven't checked out that Netflix series yet that you mentioned. I need to.
I'm super jealous that she got to party with the Obamas.
Yes.
That is low-key a dream of mine.
Oh, my God.
I love them.
Imagine being a fly on the wall in that room.
Yeah.
I love the idea of them just being, like, in real cash, tracksuit bottoms, you know, sitting on their sofa. Yeah.
It must have been so surreal.
They had like a multi-pack of Watsits or something like that, didn't they?
Yeah. The Frazzles.
The cheese booth. And,
I wonder if they do a good sausage roll at the White House.
Mm. I don't think they have sausage rolls in America.
What?
I think they think sausage rolls are like... So their pigs in blankets have pastry on, which is obviously kind of like a
wrong.
Sausage roll.
Very wrong.
So wrong.
Yeah. Thank you both for joining me.
Pleasure.
And thank you for having us again.
Thank you to Sarah as well, taking the time in a very busy week. Remember, you can check out all the latest music news and charts on officialcharts.com and follow us on all the major social media platforms at Official Charts. And we'll see you again soon.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.